Welcome back. Thanks to Micheál Pearce and Brendan again for their contributions in the first hour. We're going to have more of your comments, or the comments that you've been sending in, coming up shortly. After we take the usual break, we're going to head to Gwydor to chat to some of those behind the success story that is Irish Pressings, a company that has gone from strength to strength over two decades, celebrating its 20 years of growth, founded in 2005 by Declan and Brendan Ward. It's grown into a global engineering and manufacturing leader from its base in Gwydor, Donegal. And I believe I actually was chatting to some of the people behind that business a couple of years ago over at the Maryfield Dunlow Festival. And I'm sure it's this company. And I was absolutely fascinated with the work that they were doing out of the county, and the important work and the amount of reach they had in the industry. In Northern Ireland, says a listener, every village or town has public toilets. They're very well kept. There is a full-time caretaker to look after them. Why can we not do the same? Is it rates? I wonder. Regarding Donegal Health Services and LUH, who has been in government all these years that allowed services to deteriorate? Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, the plan to privatise health is working, as who wants to sit in a hospital and have leave undiagnosed and untreated after 20 hours on a chair, if lucky to have a chair, they say. It's a wonderful smug privilege to maintain an ideologically insulated stance while the real world spins by, for example, boycotting Washington on St. Patrick's Day. The real problem in Letterkenny is the Monday to Friday 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. attitude. To begin change, it needs to begin with being operational on a 7-day week, 24 hours a day basis. Most people are opting now to go private other than sit in the ED for 30 to 40 hours. And I did put that question to the panel as well. First time in my life, I agree with Micheál, Colin McGillan Asperg. The health service is being run into the ground, and we, in desperation, will accept privatisation. People should be outraged at what is happening in hospitals, the health service, Irish Water and Education. Badge management practices, politicians and civil servants should hang their heads in shame. Please ask Pearce Doherty if he goes to Florida in the USA to be treated for medical issues, as his party colleague Gerry Adams did when he got cancer. It reminds me of George Orwell's novel Animal Farm, where the people who are supposed to represent the working class use the service of the rich when they need to, thus speaking out of both sides of their mouths. I don't know the ins and outs of that. I do know that many people opt, and I know them personally. They're not friends of mine, but I know of their stories personally, whereby they were given treatment pathways for cancer in this country, or given certain prognoses for cancer in this country, and did travel to different countries where it wasn't radical treatment, but the prognosis and treatment plan was very different, and thankfully they're still around today. It's not just Letterkenny, says a listener. I have a brother in Navan waiting 7 weeks for a heart operation in the matter. They said it was too dangerous for him to go home. Nobody will even answer the phone in the matter to let us know what's happening. This is a nationwide issue. Having a good laugh here this morning at that delusional so-called left-wing councillor call US citizens rednecks. Has he disowned his rural heritage now? I see where you're coming from and that phraseology. Talking about another country's dimly understood politics, Trump is a great blessing to Irish politicians in that they can blame their own ongoing incompetence and inaction on him. Greg, have they not looked at the correlation in the interest rates? When the stock markets declined, interest rates went up. When the stock prices increased again, interest rates remained high. This is about the worst sign we've seen. If I was an American, I'd be very worried. And if I was Irish European, I'd be looking at getting out of Europe before the knock-on effects of these interest rates reach the EU. Either the money printer will have to be turned on again, or an Ursula von der Leyen stated recently the EU will be required to cease the savings accounts of EU citizens for the greater good, of course, or look at buying Bitcoin in small amounts. The Europeans are looking to lower interest rates to offset this. And I don't know if it's a uniquely American problem because of their bonds being so volatile. President Trump is doing what he said in his election manifesto. Ireland is just not used to people actually following through with pre-election promises. He's doing what he said, but then he's undoing what he said as well. I mean, whether I'm not anti-Trump, actually. Or I'm not pro-Trump. I kind of take his policies one at a time. I can see why a lot of people favour what he does in terms of some of the stuff that he does take action on. But in terms of his promises in regards to the economy. He's had to backtrack on them, and that's indisputable whether you support him or not. What is the panel's view on the lack of amenities open in Ireland once there's good weather? We really need to embrace the good weather and go with it when it arrives. I visited Aranmore Island this week simply because I was off and it was good weather. There was a real lack of anything being open. I met two different groups who went over on the ferry with me and because of the beauty decided to stay the night but couldn't because there was a two-night minimum stay in the places they asked. When did two nights become a thing? Surely business is business. Well, I mean, there's business models too, isn't there? And, you know, businesses that are, well, generally speaking, businesses that are sort of focused on good weather and the summer, for an example, they can't tool up and get the staff in and the food or the equipment or whatever it might be just because we happen to have two good weeks early in April as well. So I'm not surprised that a lot of stuff is not necessarily open and ready to go. Not an hour more, I'm speaking more generally, because you could not have predicted this weather and you couldn't have staff sitting around waiting and on the books and your food ordered on the off chance the weather might be nice. Okay, more of your comments as we wear on this morning, as we move on this morning. A couple of requests, if that's okay. Eileen McConnell's in Prokish and Churchill, and Eileen is 90 today. Happy birthday, Eileen, from us all here at Highland Radio, and your brother Danny, sister-in-law Kathleen, and family. Laura Johnson's in Knockard in Letterkenny, and it's her birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Laura, from your mum and your dad. Indeed, and we're going to be crossing over and chatting to some of the team at Irish Pressings very shortly. But this is a real success story. You know, you get the right idea, you get the right supports, you get the right people at the helm, and you can go from growth to growth to growth, 20 years of growth in fact. Donacha O'Boyle is Development Executive with Udaras na Gaeltachta, and it's a pleasure to be speaking about and to a little later on such a success story, Donacha.
Yes, Margie Wythers, good morning, Greg. Yeah, it's a true Gaeltacht success story, a good Donegal success story. And Udaras na Gaeltachta, they are absolutely delighted to have played a part in that, to support them. And as you say, over 20 years, they've transformed this business into a very significant employer in this area.
What lessons can be learned from this? I mean, this is ongoing word from Udaras, of course, and there are other success stories, but I suppose it is support, harnessing, understanding and supporting ideas and innovators.
That's it. I mean, they came to us 20 years ago as young lads, Declan, Brendan Ward and Noel McBride from the Rosses. And it's important to say, Greg, local politics here, they're in Gidor. They have strong Gidor connections, Dunluce and Gola. And they wanted to start in a highly competitive automotive sector. And, you know, that was a tough sector and to get into. And a lot of questions would have been asked, but we could spot their passion and potential straight away because they were serious becoming an emerging enterprise in this tough sector. So basically, we started off very simple. We leased them a building, an empty building, nothing but four walls and a roof, and Unit 19, and you've seen where it has gone from there. But you asked, what can we learn from this? I think this is totally locally grown, and it's a story, it's a testament to what can be achieved. You know, that proves that local entrepreneurs in Donegal can compete with anybody else on a world stage. It's a remarkable success story. I mean, from that building, from three people, today, they're a wee bit like Colm Killis cloak. They've spread all over the estate. They're over four buildings. They're in the largest building on the estate. They have 130 people working for them. They're global leaders in designing and manufacturing of metal pressings. And out of Gidor, they are shipping to four continents.
Well, I was going to point to that because I think this is an important maybe indicator for other businesses or people with business ideas, because often you feel you have to move away and you can have the Donegal brains behind a business located elsewhere. Look, we have seen improvements in access to the west of the county, particularly from the south of the county, but you know, there is no doubt it is remote, but they bring in a lot of material and they export a lot of product, working with Honda, BMW, Jaguar, Land Rover, etc. But it's all been done maintaining the presence in Gwydor, which, as I say, is an indicator that if you want to, you can do it in that location.
like, geography's not a barrier. They're sent into the UK, Germany, Mexico, Japan, Middle East, Asia, and, of course, North America and USA.
What are the challenges, or the opportunities for that matter? I don't want to be a default, coming at it from a default negative. What, for the next, you know, 5-10 years, what does Udars hope to achieve in terms of, you know, I think was the last books, was there a slight net increase in jobs or a slight net increase?
What we have at the moment, we have 225 client companies in Donegal, employing nearly 2,700. And we're talking about locally grown companies like this. 86% of those are local people who have started their businesses. Now, something like 80% of those are under 10. But still, the vast majority of them are local industry. And in the past, we would have been criticised, especially in the 70s and 80s, that we only supported foreign business. But the thing has changed. There's still foreign investment and it's still important.
That's fine, but there used to be a perception that they would come in, they would start up and the money would run out and they would leave. There's clawbacks and stuff now. Things have changed in that regard.
No, they're here for the long run. Like, I mean, they recently added 120,000 square feet.
I mean more generally. Sorry, Donica, I'm not referencing.
Oh, sorry. There was that perception in the past. And we did have a lot of companies like that. And I think what happened really in that we lost a lot of those companies in the late 90s, we were losing 1,000 jobs a month. In 1998-99, the Republic of Ireland, traditional manufacturing. But this manufacturing is really added value manufacturing. And they're really good at it. And it isn't that they haven't faced their challenges and obstacles in their 20-year journey. They face real challenges. They started in 2005. And you remember, Greg, 2008 to 2010, we had a financial crisis. And they just were on their feet at that stage. We had Brexit. We had COVID pandemic, and we had the Ukrainian war that really spiked price, energy.
Well, they're tapped into the global market, so
a cough or a change over there affects Gidor, so it shows you how global this company is.
Yeah, okay.
But they faced all those challenges, and I'm sure the American thing as well, it'll be the same way. It was interesting, I heard a crisp company that was last week being interviewed, and they say the exact same thing that Declan Ward and Karen and Ben will say in there. We will adapt through this, trade through this, and emerge probably more resilient. So they've constantly showed great leadership when they have had these challenges.
All right, listen, it's been lovely chatting to you, Donegha. Thanks so much for your time. Have a lovely weekend. Donegha O'Beal, Development Executive with Udars na Gaeltachta, and we'll be speaking to the guys at Irish Pressings very, very shortly as well, so stay tuned for that. Congratulations to Declan, Sarah, boys and all the staff at Irish Pressings on 20 years in business. Thank you for all your support and kind sponsorship over the years from all at Niamh Mora. And you know, that, again, this is the whole great thing about local companies. When you are looking them to support a club or a local cause, they're there, aren't they? Good morning. Can I get people's views on tips, please? My daughter got a substantial tip from a table of 16 diners, which she served herself, from seating them to clearing the table when they were finished, plus numerous drinks orders. Should she not be allowed to keep the tip and not have to put it into the tips jar for everyone else to share? Thank you. It's a toughie, that, isn't it? Especially, you know, you'll get businesses where you'll have maybe one or two staff that are more industrious than others and maybe more inclined to get tips. I think sometimes, you know, in the interests of fairness, like, my feeling is you should not reward people who don't work as hard as others. That's really controversial, isn't it? But I think if you reward a lower level of service, that definitely can be problematic, you know. I think you're far better off encouraging those that do well and maybe keeping the lion's share of what they are responsible for. And maybe that might inspire others to up their game. But I think when you reward mediocrity, firstly, it encourages mediocrity, but I think it also discourages those that go above and beyond. So it's a tough line. But what do you think? It probably is policy in most places that tips are pooled and split up at the end of the day. I suppose there's a lot of people working in the back that, you know, make the food and put in tough shifts there, that they would get no tips unless tips were pooled. I don't know. It doesn't affect me directly. I'm throwing out there to see what you all think. Kevin is with me now. Kevin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping, Kevin?
I'm getting there. I'm nearly there. I'm good out for him.
Good stuff, because 5 weeks ago, things were very, very different. When did you realise something was up with you, and how long was it before, you know, you had your heart attack?
Well, it came out of the blue. It was 9 o'clock on the Thursday night that I felt unwell. Then all of a sudden I got the bang. And within 4 minutes, there was two ambulances there. Gritty rang right away. And I was taken down to A&E. The cardio ambulance landed along with the ordinary ambulance with the paramedics. Brilliant. Unbelievable. Look, see the treatment I got.
And Kevin, may I ask just before you go, where are you based?
I'm in Letterkenny, Ashbrook.
Okay, and within 4 minutes,
just
the
up above the hospital.
There. Okay, wow, fantastic.
Yeah. And the I was taken down to a resource that developed. It was getting worse. They were putting the paddles on me, and decided it wouldn't make Galway, so they took me into Alton Galvin. So at 12:30 at night, I was being stented on the main artery on the right-hand side. So within 3 hours, 3.5 hours, I was sorted.
And let me ask, did they have to resuscitate you, or were they preparing to resuscitate you, Kevin?
They were preparing to resuscitate me.
Okay.
Because that was developing into just, what can I say, the pain was unreal. I mean, I've had a couple before and nothing as bad as this. But why I'm on is to say I've been sitting listening this last 4 or 5 weeks about A&E and waiting times and all that lot. And as I said, A&E has become a doctor's surgery. There's people there at A&E because they can't get into their own doctor's surgery. There's people there that, now I'm a man of an age that remembers that if you went out and you nearly cut the finger off yourself, it was dealt with at home, you know. What I'm saying on that is, I hate saying it, but there are people in A&E that have no need to be in A&E, that are blocking up the system. But the system is there for somebody that is really, really ill. And we have one of the best health services in Europe because I've accessed it every way with my problems with the heart. And I have never been left sitting.
The Kevin,
waiting for hours.
Just to
I'm
tease,
sure there's other people like me.
Yeah, just to tease out the conversation with you and not to contradict you. I mean, the HSE themselves said that on Monday the hospital beds were full, every bed was taken up, and that there were 34 people who had been in the ED that were waiting to get into a bed into hospital. Now, maybe some of them needed some, you know, important treatment. So, you know, those aren't people that should have been at their GPs. Those are people that have been triaged. So I don't dispute that what you're saying, that sometimes it can feel like a GP's ward or a GP's waiting room, but it is the HSE themselves that said the hospital was full, 34 people sick that needed a bed, and elective surgeries being cancelled the next day. So it's not like it's not stuff that I'm making up here. This is information coming from the HSE themselves, Kevin. And that doesn't take away from what you're saying. A lot of people will agree. There are people there that could be seen to in the community with their GP or now doc.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is really, Greg, is the fact that somebody comes in with a stroke, heart attack, there is always a bed there for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You are going to be treated like, I'm saying it from a what you can call a frequent flyer. I was airlifted 4 years ago from Letterkenny to Galway with a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done it by ambulance and everything else to Galway. And what I'm saying is the service is there for critically ill patients.
Understood. I get where you're coming from. So in other words, if you have a twisted knee, you are probably going to have to wait hours, but you're of the view that if you are critically ill, you're fast-tracked, you get through, you get the help, and you're out.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, now, yes.
So unfortunately, that is the system, and there's nothing. If I went down today with a busted wrist, I would have to wait. And I understand that I would have to wait.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? Because it's not critical. And they're backed up. The staff down there is incredible. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it. And something has to be done to sort the whole thing out. And Greg, as I said earlier on, I'm probably just repeating, we haven't grown with the population.
Mm-hmm.
Our services hasn't grown with the population. And we have money, we're awash with money, and it seems to be money that we can distribute to other things, but not for what we essentially need, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't.
And essentially, we need a health, we have a good health service, but we haven't the capacity for the population that we have, and the growing population. It's like setting out a plan. We seem to plan now for today. We don't, when we're making up a plan, we don't plan for 20 years. We'll do this now, but it's to incorporate the population in 20 years type advanced planning. You know?
Mm.
So that but a hospital now that they're doing over there, they're building. I wonder, is that done for 20 years time? So it could be 3 or 4 wards lying empty.
Yeah, I get you. I know what you're saying. But we've seen recently with the building of the Little Angels School.
I didn't want to mention that.
Yeah, well, that and they're still waiting and they're holding their fire on that because they've been promised something will be done. I know what they're waiting on and it's complex. But that's a project that didn't future plan like you've talked about. Yeah. Kevin, I'm glad you are well. I hope you don't put any more frequent flyer miles up for a while at the very least, Kevin. but keep him well. Thanks so much for your time and your point of view and giving us, I suppose, a little bit of a different angle on that conversation. We are now crossing over to our head of sales, Sean Quinn. Good morning, Sean. How are you getting on? You are there. Live from Irish Pressings, and it looks fantastic. Have you had a chance to have a look about so far yet?
It's absolutely stunning down here this morning in Gweedore, Greg. Sun is shining. I can see 130 employees enjoying breakfast rolls in the sunshine. We're coming live today from Irish Pressings, who are celebrating 20 years of business today. What a show they're putting on. We're going to talk very shortly to Declan Ward, who is the Managing Director, and Karen Campbell, who is the Sales and Logistics Manager down here. So it's been a great success. And I suppose the slogan that I learned yesterday about the business is, they're a global company, but very much local within the community, Greg. And what I'd like to do is to hand over to Declan, who he can tell you more about the journey that he's been on as a business.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks very much for that. Declan, good morning to you. Thank you so much for hosting us. How are you keeping?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. We're all, it's nice to see everybody around here today enjoying breakfast and good weather and pleased to have Highland Radio here.
Take us back to 2005, the conversations, the ideas, what you thought you could achieve.
Well, I suppose I'd been working in automotive since 1989. I started off at a company called Kirchhoff Automotive worked in Letterkenny. And then in 2002, I was asked to go to Germany by the owner, Kirchhoff, to run a big Ford program. They just won. So off I went to Germany for 2 years to work there. And I suppose successfully completed that. But probably the last 6 months, I was thinking to myself here, with, I suppose, all my experience, all I'd ever seen in automotive, I thought, okay, I can probably do better, you know.
Yeah, but did it ever cross your mind about the location? Because I know you're a very proud local man, and with the ambition that you had and Brendan had, were you confident that you'd be able to do it in Guido, given the fact that you'd be, you know, importing materials, exporting materials, you know, we're familiar with, you know, potential issues in terms of access. Did it ever cross your mind that side of things, Declan?
I suppose the way I looked at that is that everything's possible from anywhere in the world. You know, it's just there are advantages and disadvantages to that. There's local communities, there are people that support the company. There's you know, when you get staff, you manage to retain them and train them and the way you want. You know, so you can overcome all of that. But everything's possible. We can do whatever we want in life. So, and no matter where we are. So,
obviously, over the last 20 years, the company has grown and grown and grown, and has you know, received approval from all of the big manufacturers. Was that part of the plan? I do wonder sometimes when you're establishing a business like that, how far can you plan ahead? Like, you know, did you have to sort of reimagine 5 years in and say, you know, right, okay, maybe here's an opportunity? Or is much of what we're seeing now, was that in the back or indeed the front of your heads when you were establishing Irish Pressings?
I suppose what I would say to that is it's all a vision in your head. You know, it's not like a documented plan on paper. You know, so you create these visions in your head and you pretty much go for it. You're all in at that point, and you kind of, when you believe in that, you kind of become unstoppable. You know, so every maybe year you have another vision and another vision. You know, so it's not just one big master plan. You just grow and grow the business, and I suppose the overall vision was to become one of the best automotive suppliers in Europe or the world. You know, and well, we have customers coming here. They can see that what we've built here, the staff, the quality levels, and they're just pretty much blown away by what we're doing here.
Brilliant stuff. Can I speak? I'll come back to you, Declan. I wouldn't mind speaking to Karen Campbell as well. Karen Campbell, if you could hand her the microphone, Declan. Karen Campbell's the sales logistic manager. Don't you go anywhere, Declan. Your work's not done yet. Karen, when we talk about, you know, the global recognition of the company, and I've mentioned some of the businesses that you work with, Honda, BMW, Bentley, Ford, Suzuki, Jaguar, Land Rover, those brands, top-end brands, and they only deal with the best, right? Because everything is their reputation. So what kind of products do you produce for these companies, and how difficult is it to forge these trusting relationships? They have to have so much faith in Irish Pressings.
Like you said, I suppose they only deal with the best, and we are the best, so that's why they deal with us. It does take time to forge the relationships. I suppose things can happen in an instant. I suppose our relationship with JLR kind of started with a LinkedIn message, and it just went from there. What we've done, I suppose, over the course of our time here is just build on our experience and build on the capabilities that we have. So what we do is we do tool making, we have design, we have fully automated systems in-house, we make stamped parts. So basically, if you look at a car, Irish Pressings could have a part anywhere in that car. We have parts in the rear end of the car, we have parts in door frames, so all over the car. And I suppose part of that is a lot of what we've done here is to make sure that we can be a global leader in terms of what we do. We look at what the customer needs and how we can best meet those needs. So I suppose the vision that Declan always had was to grow the company. So we started off initially with one small washer for the automotive industry. And believe it or believe it not, that washer went into numerous amounts of different vehicles, including a limited edition Aston Martin that was used in some films as well. So I suppose what we'd always started with that, the parts that we now make, they're more complex, they're more more diverse in terms of what we do. So it's been a great level of expansion throughout the years.
How do you compete? Right, because obviously, you know, Ireland is a more expensive place to do business than some other countries. And maybe there are other countries with low overheads, companies in other countries that might try and compete. So can we be competitive on price, or with the companies that we're talking about, are they looking at sort of quality and reliability as well? Is there a balance to be struck within those different areas?
There absolutely is. And I suppose what we've seen from a lot of our customers is price isn't key. I mean, these automotive customers, they need good quality products. So a company like us, we've got a JLRQ award, which means we're one of the top quality suppliers into Jaguar Land Rover. So when you have something like that, we're able to compete not only on cost, and obviously cost is difficult. I mean, you see the prices of materials just continually increasing, but our customers are also aware of that. So we are supported on things like that. But a lot of what we do is very much directed at innovation and automation. Like, we have things here like camera systems checking the quality of the parts. We have robots, full robotic assembly, and things like that. So if you can focus on things like that, it means you're more competitive. But the customers very much look at things like cost, quality. Sustainability is another one that's extremely important to our customers. So we're doing a lot of work here for future sustainability and to make sure that our customers know Irish Pressings is aiming to be an environmentally friendly company as
well.
Yeah,
it's interesting you say that, because when we think of sort of the motor industry, and I know you work with other industries, but we often, when we think about sort of the environment, we focus an awful lot about what comes out of the exhaust, but it's also in the supply chain as well. So you are, in the practices that you're employing, you know, adding to a more environmentally finished product.
Absolutely. And I mean, what we've done here in our new facility is set up a really state-of-the-art facility. And that was very much in Declan's mind from the outset as well, because we're well aware of what our customers' needs and what their requirements are going forward. So in terms of things like solar panels, water heating systems, and we have our own bees outside as well. So in a short space of time, we have Irish Pressings honey. So even small little things like that, they're just things that catch the customer's attention. And like Declan mentioned, when you have someone coming here from Jaguar Land Rover, JCB, Aston Martin, those kind of companies, they walk through the doors here and they see what we've done and they are absolutely astounded.
I can imagine the most that probably land into to the local airport. They're driven to beautiful Gwydor and you've potentially got a pot of honey sitting on the reception desk for them as well, grown outside. I don't know if they think we're mad or amazing or some combination of both, but it's all part of the product. Listen, stay where you are, Karen. That's Karen Campbell, who's a sales and logistic manager. We also have Declan Ward, managing director of Irish Pressings. I've loads more questions for them. I have to take a very quick break. Sit tight, grab a bacon sandwich. We have about 2.5 minutes and then we'll be right back. Wishing Declan and his team at Irish Pressing continued success. Here's to the next 20 years from a good friend, James Doohan. Can you give a big shout out to Martin McGarvey, who's worked in Irish Pressings? Declan Ward, who is the managing director. Declan, there have been the challenges over the years. You know, we're facing into potential disruptions with the US tariffs. But, you know, if you look at the timeline, you started just before the recession. There have been other challenges as well. And yet here you are 20 years on with significant growth. Is it difficult to balance all of that? You know, the growth, maintaining a business, but also the external challenges?
Yeah, I suppose it's been a real tough journey over the last 20 years. It's we've had a lot of challenges, but sometimes how you face those challenges or how you step up to them. So any time we face a real challenge, recession or whatever, we kind of go take it head on and make the most of it. But we look on challenges like that as opportunities. So for example, the tariffs at the moment, we look at that as opportunities. We looked at COVID as opportunities, you know. So we kind of go around them and look for opportunities rather than I suppose run away from it.
Are you a risk taker, Declan? When you're growing the business, right? You don't want to grow too quick. You don't want to start investing sort of on a wing of a prayer. How cautious are you in terms of investment and development? Because, I mean, as we've been saying from the beginning, the growth over the last 20 years is remarkable. But there comes time, I suppose, where you just have to sit around and strategize and decide what the next move is.
Yeah, risk taker.
Okay, good.
Sure. some people would say, yeah, he's a bit crazy, but I guess it's kind of calculated risks. And when you create that vision to get somewhere, that kind of goes out of your head. You know, you're going to get there. Once that decision's made, we're going there, and that's it. You know, so you tend to work your way around stuff. Look at other opportunities, but the end goal is to get where you visualise.
Lovely stuff. We also are joined by Noel McBride, whose story is a remarkable story as well, Noel, because you've been there right from the get-go and you started, well, your growth really is growth in line with the business. You started as an apprentice and they still can't get rid of you. I mean, you're still there.
Yeah, exactly. You go back to 2005, I completed my leaving cert, and shortly after I got a call from Declan. I was interested in starting. And yeah, I started basically in an empty shell of a factory. We built it up. We started from there. I'd done 4 years of an apprenticeship. I was under a bit of pressure because both Declan and Brandon both had won Apprentice of the Year, and luckily enough, I secured it as well in 2009. And from that then, maybe 4 or 5 years later, Declan and Brandon trusted me to become the room manager in that short space of time. And since then, it's just gone from strength to strength.
And it must be really exciting because you've seen the growth, but also the innovation as well. So, you know, I suppose really we're apprentices all of our lives, aren't we? I know you're very well qualified and you are the tool room manager there. But, you know, as you continue your innovation, it must be a lovely thing to be a part of and to be at the cutting edge of some of this stuff, you know, doing some stuff for the first time, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot of that's coming from the guidance of Declan. Like, Declan's not afraid to take on something new, and we kind of just roll in behind him and make it happen. You know, to think of what we're doing in Northwest Donegal is remarkable. The amount of automation that's going on between robotic welding, presses, transfer, you name it. You know, we do it and we don't shy away from it.
I might just go back to Karen, if that's all right. And lovely to speak to you, Noel. I do appreciate it. The other great thing about a business being located in the community, obviously it's generating employment, but it's also sort of, you know, being part of that community and presence in the community and supporting it, Karen.
Yeah, that's been a massive thing for us. I suppose we have over 130 employees here, and I suppose what we look at is what we can do for the local area as well. I suppose over our time here, we paid out nearly, I think, 32 million in wages, which has probably generated over 100 million euro for the local economy. So that in itself is something really, really good for the local Guidoor, Dunloe, Kilcara, wider areas. But a big part of what we do is the community engagement. So I suppose we support things like Mary from Dunloe, Salt Festival. We do an awful lot to try with community and school engagement as well, and that's a big thing, you know, like bringing the local schools in, getting them here, because people don't really know maybe what Irish Pressings do exactly, because we don't supply anything into the local area. It's hard to know what happens behind our doors, so we always welcome the schools and the school groups coming in here, having a look around. And what you find then is when you get those school children in, they can see the innovation, they can see what's happening here, and they get a real buzz out of what's going on. And that kind of really helps us then bring in the skills for the future as well, to ensure current and future employment.
Fantastic. And Declan, last word with you, if that's okay. You know, we're not here, you're not here blowing your own trumpet saying job done, mission complete here. You're not even halfway through this journey. You know, often just us in general society might look at what's going to happen next week or the week after. You've already got ambitious plans in place for 2030. You're seeing far beyond any temporary bumps in the road with tariffs and what have you. And those plans for the end of this decade are really ambitious, Declan.
Yeah, I guess we want to continue to grow the company and make it, I suppose, risk management is a thing for us where we change direction every so often. We don't become too reliant on automotive or any other sector. So we look at different regions, different currencies, different sectors. Like we made a move probably about a year and a half ago to go into different sectors, and then as automotive dropped off, those were picking up. So it's really about, in business nowadays, about risk management. What's up for the next number of years? Who knows? We want to, I suppose, work on the building a little bit more, become pretty much self-sufficient in everything, even down to energy. What else would we, I suppose, something that's in my mind for the community and the younger people is maybe a little engineers academy. You know, we've got a lot of sports going on around the local communities, but we're not really looking at anybody in our sector. So giving kids the opportunities there to develop maybe and open a little engineers academy where we take them in on weekends, train them and...
I have a sense if it's in your mind, it's going to become reality, Declan. Listen, we're going to call back after 11, if that's okay. But for now, Noel, lovely to speak to you. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work there. Noel McBride, the company's first ever employee, and now he is a tool room manager there. Karen Campbell, sales logistics manager. Declan Ward, managing director as well. For now, thank you very much indeed, guys.